You're listening to a Frequency Podcast Network production.
People like Naomi Campbell, right? Tyra Banks, myself, and others, right? Within the industry, we know how to work it, right? Where we're always like in demand somehow, right? We don't get comfortable. A lot of these models nowadays, they're just like, oh, I look cute and pretty. I got a nice body, you know, whatever brand booked me or whatever. And I'm making, you know, tens of millions of dollars. And that's all that it is. And I'm always going to get this for life. They better learn.
Hi, and welcome to a new episode of Black Tea. My name is Milena Williams.
And my name is Dalton Higgins.
And we are so excited about today's show. I mean, I'm always excited about every show because I love having my own show. but today we're going to be talking to Stacey McKenzie, Canadian legend, Jamaican legend of America's Next Top Model, Canadian's Next Top Model, Canada's Drag. I mean, the list goes on and on.
Yeah, for sure. And I like how you referenced her, sort of the connections to Canada, to Jamaica. Like she's lived in New York for many years, and I remember doing some work out in New York and bumping into her in New York of all places. I'm like, hey, Stacey, hey, what's going on? You know, like, yeah. So she's like nomadic. She's just blown up everywhere, you know?
That's amazing. Yeah. And this is definitely a Jamaican show. So there's no surprise we have another Jamaican on.
Totally. Yeah, so stay tuned in, man. This one is sizzling, smoking, sweltering hot. So stay tuned. Today's guest is Stacey McKenzie, and Stacey is this Jamaican-born Canadian model. She's a runway modeling coach, she's a motivational speaker, and she's a television personality. Stacey has been a judge on the Canadian reality television show Canada's Next Top Model. She's appeared on America's Next Top Model and most recently was on Canada's Drag Race. Now, Stacey, if you've seen her in person, so she's very tall and stately. She stands about 5'10" tall, and she boasts this massive resume doing work in castings and catwalks with the creme de la creme of designers, people like Betsy Johnson, all the way to Jean-Paul Gaultier, and it goes on and on. We could fill up a half an hour just talking about her exploits. So, Stacey, what's going on? Where are you at, Stacey? What's happening?
Man, I mean, a lot's been going on, especially during these crazy times. You know, I've been back and forth. It's a little different. It's a lot different now, but, you know, I'm just like thankful and grateful that, you know, I'm here. I'm healthy. My family and friends are healthy as well. So yeah, man, you know, I'm here.
Stacey, even with the pandemic, you know, how has the, you know, pandemic affected your industry? You know what I mean? As far as fashion, television, your travels, because it's had crazy impacts on a lot of us.
Oh yeah. It affected the industry big time in terms of, well, first, at one point, a lot of the work went to virtual, which was weird. So it was like a virtual fashion shows. There was no audience. I mean, there was audience, but they're watching from their comforts of their homes. And the models, you know, just one model at a time, like do a runway show with no audience right there to cheer on or, you know, to bring that excitement. So that was weird. Also, nowadays, you know, you have to present, you know, a certain type of ID and thing in order to enter fashion shows and, you know, even go for castings or do our jobs as models. So a lot has changed in that way. It's not as carefree as it was before.
Yeah, no, but even as far as even travel too, right? Because yeah, you're a bit of a globetrotter. Yeah. You know, you'd lived in Europe, you know, spent time in Jamaica, Canada, the States. You'd lived in New York for many years. Like, you're a globetrotter. Yeah. How has it impacted your travels?
Oh, big time, right? Before I used to just wake up and be like, okay, you know what? I feel like going to LA today. You know what I mean? I'd be like, all right. Or my agent would call me up and be like, we need you to fly out tonight to Paris. And they would literally just send me my plane
those
ticket.
Were the days.
And I just like, yeah, those were the days. And I'll just like, you know, they'll send me a car service. I'll get to the airport. I'll just like, you know, show my passport and thing and just get on the plane. No, you have to do all this paperwork and all this stuff that takes like day and do it days before, a week before. So it doesn't make what I do as fun as it used to be.
Right. So one of the things that for me has been pivotal in terms of what I've seen in your career, like I really grew up watching you and admiring your beauty and, you know, your role in the modeling industry, and just you're such a trailblazer. But one of the things I remember is, to me, because I never reveal my age ever, but you to me are my generation's Winnie Harlow. The freckles, the fierceness, you're Canadian. So do you ever get that comparison?
No. You're like the second person that has said that.
What?
No, I'm keeping it. No, but like, okay, listen. I get what you're saying with Winnie and all, right? But it's like there's still a difference though. Like, we all have our own thing going, like our own difference. You know what I mean? But I see what you're saying though, in how me and her is kind of alike, right? We're very outgoing, right?
Yeah.
Very, like,
and just to see a black woman from Scarborough. I mean, I think, you're both Jamaican. You know, like, I don't know. Just for me, it was like, I'm Jamaican. So I was like, yo, like, she reminded me of you.
But you're like the second person that has said that. You're the second person. Why you say sorry? No. You're the second person that has said that. It's a compliment, first of all, to be like, you know, like, first of all, to have another sister, you know, doing her thing or whatever, and other sisters out there, you know, doing their thing. Yo, it's a big deal. And especially in these times when, you know, when I first started out, it wasn't like that. You know what I mean? Like, it's very rare that you see, you know, a very unique looking model, and especially a black model too, on top of that. You know, usually it's just the one off, right? Okay, we already have a black girl and we already have a light skinned girl. Nowadays, it's like, okay, you got the Winnie, you got the Amari, you got, like, you know, all these different types of beauties and bodies, you know, looks, body types. So I'm loving it. When I first started out, I was hoping, like, I wanted to see more of my people out there. Like, I'm a keeper real. Dalton, you know. Right. You know what I mean? I wanted to see more sisters, you know, more brothers and sisters out there. It used to annoy me when I would go on castings and the casting director would be like, we already have one black girl. Meanwhile, they got like 20 white girls, you know, and 10 and 15 white boys, right?
Yeah, and I think also any sort of black model that happens to be very, you know, a bit non-traditional, unconventional, there are going to be comparisons, you know what I mean? Like, people that are into pop culture and grew up, you know, just checking out a bunch of, you know, you see people on the, you know, the catwalks and fashion magazines and black culture magazines, and it was like Stacey McKenzie came out, she's tall, stately, very attractive, freckle face and all that. And then all of a sudden you saw it seemed like all these casting agencies, and they started booking all of these, hey, let's find the next freckle faced, tall, stately, you know what I mean? Like models, right? So you just saw a whole explosion of that, which is kind of interesting. But you are the OG behind that. There's no question.
Oh gosh, don't call me OG. Really, Dalton?
Mel, you're OG.
Mel, you're
OG. You have OG status.
Dalton, fully caught.
You have OG status, man.
I was going to say, that's a compliment.
You got OG status. What are you talking about? Cynthia Bailey, all of y'all. You know what I mean? Tyra Banks, you got OG status. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, gosh. One thing I wanted to say too, like, I feel like nowadays too, it's easier for a model to become a model. You know what I'm saying? I mean, with social media, you know what I'm saying? It's like, okay, you do some pictures on social media.
And because
it's like
of Instagram, you mean?
You know, you get some bright. Yeah, like, it's easier. Listen, Tyra, like, you know, when we started out, like, we literally had to, you know, like, go to castings, stand in front of the casting director, give her a portfolio. You know what I'm saying? It was work.
Yeah.
We would do like 10, 15 castings a day, right? Now it's like, okay, the brand sees somebody on social media, or even if they're interested in a model from an agency, and they just get on, you know, like a WhatsApp or FaceTime, whatever. And then, you know, it's like, boom, there, you get a job. No, we had to like actually do legwork. You know, I used to do like 10, 15 castings a day on appointments and didn't get one job. You know what I'm saying? And I would do that for like, you know, months and months and months, castings, appointments. And yeah, it was hard.
It's so interesting you say that, because Naomi Campbell was on Watch What Happens Live, and Andy Cohen asked her about these comments that Kendall Jenner made about, I don't go to castings, I don't have to book shows like that. And she's like the highest paid model, and how models were pissed off at her. And Naomi said no comment. So it's just like, yo, Naomi has no comment. Like, there's clearly a divide generationally. I'm not saying it's like a war, but what you're saying makes so much sense. It's just a different kind of work.
Yes, it's just different nowadays. And it's like they take it for granted. like, I'm going to speak. Dalton, you know I'm already going to speak. This is tea, right? The black tea, right? Black tea.
That's black right. That's right. Absolutely.
So I'm going to comment on a lot of things. No, they take it for granted. And they have this attitude, like Miss Kylie, who's talking about she don't got to do whatever, whatever. Like, my girl, you're lucky you're getting the opportunities you're getting. You know what I'm saying? But what she needs to remember is there's always going to be somebody that's going to come and take her place real quick. and could be real soon too, right? But a lot of these new models, they take it very, very like, they're very ungrateful for the opportunities that they're getting now. And I don't think them opportunities are going to last long because it came too quickly. And that's why, hence, people like Naomi Campbell, right, Tyra Banks, myself, and others, right, within the industry, that's why we tend to have longevity in this industry, because we know how to work it, right, where we're always like in demand somehow. Right? We don't get comfortable. A lot of these models nowadays, they're just like, oh, I look cute and pretty. I got a nice body, you know, whatever brand booked me or whatever. And I'm making, you know, tens of millions of dollars. And that's all that it is. And I'm always going to get this for life. They better learn. But anyways, enough about that.
I mean, here's the thing, Stacey. Outside of fashion, so people know you as this television host, and you've done a bunch of fantastic, you know, campaigns, obviously. But Stacey McKenzie super fans, or people that are, you know, media critics, they would have noticed that you're starting to, you know, pivot more into like acting and stuff like that, right? Like, you know, I'm a hip hop junkie. Everybody knows that. And so some of us hip hop heads, you know, we've seen you appear in De La Soul videos. And even in the late 90s, you know, you played this now iconic bit part as this sci-fi stewardess in the cult classic film, The Fifth Element, with Bruce Willis, you know? But I've noticed nowadays, like you're appearing, like I saw you on this American crime drama, Power, which a lot of people watch. And also, we've seen you on Utopia Falls on Hulu. So what's going on? Are you making that big jump transition into acting, into the film world, or what's going on?
You know what? I've actually been always interested in acting. Like, you know, like you said, my first acting job I did was Fifth Element, but I didn't really delve into it as much before, even though I wanted to. And the reason why, and you're going to learn a little something new about me today with that, was because I had a hard time remembering my lines. So for a while, many, many years, I didn't want to delve into acting, even though I was always being, you know, asked, and I've always gotten offers to do like mad, like movies, TV shows from long time. And I was just like, nah, I didn't want to feel shame. I was like, no, man, I don't want to go like learn my lines and then I get on set and then I forget it. Cause I was literally like always just forgetting it. And then I was like, you know what though? I need to get rid of that, that fear. You know what I'm saying? So first Utopia Falls stepped to me and they were like, you know, we'd love to have you. And it was like a big role. And I'm like, I don't know, man, it's lines, right? But they actually worked with me and, you know, taught me how to memorize my lines and stuff. And I was like, okay. So I was able to do it. And I was like, all right, I feel more comfortable now. And then with Power, it wasn't much lines that I had. I just had like one line and I wanted to say it in Patois.
Wagwan Tariq, you look sharp.
Thanks, Seville.
And they allowed me to say it in Patois, which was really good. My native tongue, right? So that was easy.
I love Power. I love Power.
I know. Listen, let me tell you, that's my show. So when Anthony Hemingway, the director, he called me and he's like, I want you to do a cameo in Power. I was like, pardon me? Are you kidding me? I'm like, tell me it's going to be with ghosts. And he's like, I don't know about all of that. Just listen, I want your power, okay? And I'm like, listen, I don't care. Just give me one word. I'll say one word. I'll say, and I'm good. But I, like, listen, like, I love what I do. So I get very excited and I get very, you know, I get very starstruck like I get stupid starstruck, Mel.
Me too, admittedly. Right? It's embarrassing.
When I got on set and I saw like Tariq, I was waiting for ghosts because I don't even know their real names. I'm like, Michael who? It was amazing.
Yeah, yeah. So wait, what scenes were you in? Like, what season was it?
I was in the finale episode, the last episode.
What?
My role was very small, but trust me, it was huge for me. I actually played a stewardess again. No, a waitress, a VIP waitress, whatever. So I'm walking backstage And Tariq is walking towards me and he's going to go do his thing. And he was all dressed and decked. And I'm like, yes! Wagwan, Tariq, you look good. That was my lines. That was it. It was definitely a blessing. I mean, I never expected any of that. And, you know, I mean, every opportunity that I've gotten in life to do what I love to do is a super, super blessing.
Yeah, so Stacey, you know, both Mel and I included, we all like to follow, you know, our favorite, you know, pop culture celebrities, models, you know, like you. And, you know, I'd love to get your feedback on what we recently read about, you know, Canadian supermodel Linda Evangelista. Now, Linda had disappeared from the public eye for a bit, you know, like a lot of people did not see Linda Evangelista around for the last couple of years. And we just actually learned, you know, it's in the news that it was because she had undergone some unsuccessful corrective cosmetic surgeries that she said left her permanently deformed, right? Due to, her body had an adverse reaction to this fat reduction procedure. And this happened like 5 years ago, that she had this procedure and she's had problems since then. And she literally said in the media that if you look at her now, she's virtually unrecognizable. Now, I would imagine that many former, you know, runway models, models in general, television personalities, they get really self-conscious and they struggle a bit with this idea of aging, you know, like the natural aging process. So I wanted to get your thoughts on like cosmetic surgery and sort of its impacts on certain industries, you know, like television personalities, models, and this idea of aging gracefully.
I personally don't believe in getting plastic surgeries and all those things. As we get older, your body changes. So it's going to change. Your face will change. Your body will change. So it's like, no matter what you do, you know, it's going to change. So my thing is like, it's just best to just be, you know, happy with who you are, what you look like, and, you know, just work with what you got. That's what I think when it comes to that stuff. Me personally, not into no plastic surgery and them things. I'm not into them things.
Let me ask you this question too. Even amongst black models, like, you know, black female models, it's not recognizable or noticeable to me that a lot of black models as they age are doing cosmetic surgery, but that might be, maybe I'm not seeing anything. I don't know. What are you seeing? Like, do you see, is it more kind of like, you know, white, non-black?
A lot of black models don't get cosmetic surgery. The ones I know, a lot, the majority of them, 99% of them don't get it. And I know a lot of them.
And why do you think that is?
I think because they're comfortable with themselves. They know that they're going to be getting older. And it's, you know, and it's, as long as they love and own and accept who they are and what they're going to become at some point, they're cool with that. And then there's some of them that is just, as they age, they still just look amazing. So they don't got to worry about nothing. Listen, I think people that get them things done, they have a self-esteem problem, like issue. They're not happy within themselves. They don't think they're good enough. So it has to do with like, you know, self-love, right? But like I said, me personally, it ain't happening. Your skin is going to shrivel up at some point. You're going to get, some of us might get double chin, right? Some of us, our nose might get broader, right? It is what it is. Just work with what you got and make the best of it. But we get some serious negative feedbacks a lot of times in our industry. When I first went to LA, Dalton, my agent at the time told me that I needed to get a boob job. And I literally just walked out right there.
Wow.
told me to get a boob. Well, you know, if you had bigger boobs and if I put in a weave. Listen, I'm not saying nothing is wrong with a weave. If that's what you want to do, that's your business. If a girl wants to rock a weave and that's her thing, that's her thing. You know what I'm saying, Mel? But that ain't my thing.
Right.
I'm not a weave chick.
Yeah.
Right. I like my natural hair. But he told me straight up that if I straighten my hair and put a weave in and make it a long hair straight weave in and get my boobs done, right, that I would make so much money. I walked out. And it's a big age. I walked out. And the owner of the agency called me up and was like, you know, Stacey, you know, you could come back or whatever. I'm like, that person can't be my agent. Because I'm not into that foolishness. I'm like, you wanted me to be with the agency? Yeah. This is what you're getting, right? When I do a job with a client, the client wants to like, you know, change my looks for whatever for the job that I'm doing, no problem. Because it's only changing my, you know, changing my aesthetics, whatever, for that day. When I'm done for the day, how many days they book me for, then I'm done. I'm back to Stacey. But you're not going to tell me to come get no boob job, put a weave in, and all this crap and crazy. Nah, it ain't for me. So if that's what you're looking for me, go find you another chick.
Thanks for, you know, sharing those nuggets of wisdom and what's, you know, the fashion world, working in television, film, all of that good stuff. We wanted to know what you've been up to recently, because I know that, you know, you're still doing, you know, modeling, fashion shoots. And I want you also, if you can sort of educate us on this whole runway modeling business, right? Because I know you used to do these runway modeling coaching situations in Canada, and you've probably done them abroad. And we heard about this thing called the Walk Camp. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I'm still doing my Walk This Way workshops, which is where I teach aspiring models all aspects of modeling. But then I have my Walk Camp, which it's more of my giving back in a different way, right? So what I do is I give 30 girls a free 2-week day camp. And in the day camp, they get to be mentored by people like myself and other people within like their respective fields, from like, you know, TV producers to, you know, writers, journalists. They get to be, you know, mentored by all these different types of people. And all these mentors, they tell their stories and then they teach them, give them a hands-on like workshop, how to get into their industry or how to do, you know, what they do. Right. So it's really, it's like my love right now. I just launched it. It's been up and running in Canada for 7 years now. And I launched it in my country of birth, Jamaica, 2 years ago. And I just, you know, the pandemic kind of had it stop for a minute, but I brought it back again this summer in Jamaica. So it was, you know, really, really amazing. And just such a blessing to be able, you know, to bring it back again, especially during these times when it's really, really needed, because, you know, a lot of these youths are at home, girls are at home, and, you know, they're depressed, they're feeling down, they're not able to see their friends, they're not able to go to school, you know, and they're just there, right? So to be able to do the camp and bring back the camp again was truly a blessing.
So Stacey, you know, we want to thank you for being you. There is only one Stacey McKenzie.
Yes, there is. And there's only one Dalton and only one Mel.
Yeah, so welcome back, Mel. I mean, yeah, lots to talk about this episode. I mean, for one, comedian Dave Chappelle, he really doesn't care what you think, what I think, what anybody thinks anymore, right? apparently. I checked out his last comedy special called The Closer, and man, that was cringeworthy, you know, for good, bad, ugly, everything in between. I don't know. What did you think? I mean, Mel, what's your take on Dave Chappelle? Oh. I'm a Dave Chappelle fan. I mean, I got to put it out there. I'm a Dave Chappelle fan.
Listen, I think a lot of us are, and this is what Dave takes for granted, that many of us are fans, and he's stubbornly doubling and tripling down on his ignorance, taking for granted his fans, throwing away his fans, having people argue on his behalf, just, you know, being super ignorant. I mean, I think the most selfish thing about the way Dave Chappelle's kind of handled things, and we'll get into it, is that he essentially builds on his scandals and he's basically trying to shame cancel culture, but he doesn't have all the facts, and it's extremely frustrating. And I'm done with Dave. I mean, I went to one of his, I think the last show he ever did in Toronto, maybe it was like in the theater across from Eaton Centre. And he was smoking a joint, and it was before he cried and ran away. Remember when he ran away? He loves to cry and run away, which is interesting because he now doesn't like when people are sensitive. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I just don't like the way he's handled it. I don't like the way Netflix has handled it.
Here's the thing with Dave. I mean, your response to him, that's what he wants. Like, he wants to get canceled. And I think, like, cancel culture among comedians, like, I think, you know, it's this whole thing of their job is to say crazy things and be offensive to everybody and equal opportunity, you know, just go after everybody. And it's just like, he thinks that's a joke. You know what I mean? I think that's at the core of like everything he does, right? So prior to The Closer, I mean, and those are some of the reasons we loved him. You know what I mean? Because he, you think about like the Clayton Bigsby sketch, you know, where he plays like this black white supremacist who, you know, this black guy attending Ku Klux Klan meetings, you know, but he's like a black white supremacist. So he's kind of like pushing envelopes, fully on steroids. I mean, one of my favorite segments of his going back to some of his earlier specials was, you know, he would do, do you remember that one where it's this like, you know, the best and quickest way to get rich is to get Oprah Winfrey impregnated. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I mean, this guy like who the hell comes up with, he's just like, I got to get rich quick. Let me impregnate Oprah. So that's what he does. Like, that's Dave Chappelle. But I do think, yeah, he wants to get canceled. He doesn't care. Like, I think I was watching it, you know, the first time I watched it, like it was cringeworthy. I mean, he's joking about sexual assault, pedophilia, and the Catholic Church. Like, it was, there were so many things in that last verse was just cringe worthy, you know? So I don't know. I'm still in shock. Yeah.
Well, I think you touched on it exactly. I mean, that is the Dave that we love. And sketch comedy is very different than stand-up comedy. As a comedian, Dave should know that. 2021 is different than 2004. Dave should understand that. Just because he hasn't evolved doesn't mean we haven't evolved, doesn't mean we don't want more. And it's just this whole thing about him wanting to, you know, cancel me. He, you know, he's defending J.K. Rowling. He's doubling down on TERF, which is trans exclusionary feminism. He's supporting that, joking about it. He wants to kind of be the, you know, emerge out of this cancel culture thing better than DaBaby, better than Kevin Hart, because he thinks he's better. And it's just like, why don't you just kind of learn? Like, I feel like somebody woke, sat him down for 20 minutes, told him a couple things, and that was all his learning. And it's just, it's not enough if you're going to touch on these subjects. And I just think it's incredibly selfish to take something that worked for you 15 years ago and force it down our throats right now when we're actually trying to create a better world. And Dave Chappelle doesn't need to work. And I actually really resent celebrities who don't need to work, who continue to beg us to consume their work and then get angry when we don't like their work. It's just, it's a little too shock jockish. And I mean, it's just, I don't like that. You know, I'm not a Howard Stern fan. Like, I just don't like it. Yes. And I'm allowed not to like it. I wanted Chappelle to go in a different direction because I really, you know, I've enjoyed his work, but I don't think he's so important to the culture that we can't hold him accountable.
Yes.
In this whole Netflix situation, the trans woman that actually spoke out against Dave has apparently been suspended. Netflix is refusing to actually say she's been suspended. They said they dealt with her comment. She actually created a Twitter thread. But an interesting thing that came out of that is that she's also the showrunner for Dear White People. People were like, Dear White People has a white showrunner? But if you ever watched Dear White People, you would know that they probably have a white showrunner.
Irony.
You know, yeah, people realize white people are running black TV shows. She used to be a writer. She got promoted. She says she's the only white person there. But guess who also had a white showrunner when he had a show? Dave Chappelle. So this is the whole thing about, like, you know, Dave Chappelle wants to talk about how the LGBT community, you know, there's racism there. Yeah, we know. But that doesn't mean that you can sit there and you know, kind of double down, and people are dying. People are committing suicide. Like, these jokes really are kind of meaningless and extremely hurtful for no reason.
And
it's just like, why, Dave? I just want to know why. But also don't tell us why.
Don't tell us why, exactly. And he has this thing with it for the trans community. Like, I don't know what that is. The guy's like
it's
obsessed.
It's an obsession.
Like,
yeah, it's an obsession at this point.
It's really, it's just bizarre. It's awkward. It's, I guess, you know, offensive. It's just bizarre, you know. But how about this? I'm going to be the, I guess not the angel's advocate or devil's advocate, but it's just like, isn't good art or effective art supposed to provoke a reaction? Think about like Kanye West, you know, people call him like this, you know, idiot savant, you know, like there's some real idiocy going on, but the guy's like bordering genius, you know, like Chappelle. Is that like part of it?
Well, art is supposed to do that, but as an artist, you're also supposed to evolve with the times, and it can't just be anything you want. You have to ask, what do people want? Do we want the dehumanization of trans people? Kanye, did we want you to be hugging Donald Trump at that visit to the White House and humiliating yourself?
No.
Did we want that TMZ rant? Yeah, there's a lot of things we didn't want. And it's interesting because I think they're friends. Because he was in Wyoming with Kanye when he was, you know, doing his Wyoming thing. You can tell the guys like that play off each other. And there's just something about men that I'm just like, you got to do better. Especially if you have the responsibility and the role that you have. And why would you want to cause any type of pain if you're supposed to be making people laugh? Like, that's what I want to know.
Yeah,
it's just stubborn to me.
Yeah, and he wants us all to overreact. And, you know, it's just, but even this as, you know, as my co-host, who happens to be, you know, a proud Black woman, like when you hear, separate from his fixation on the trans community, which is transphobic, clearly, you know, when he makes jokes, like, he'll say some shit like, I don't even know if I should be like, you know, in response to, you know, female, like women and critics mm-hmm. going after him, you know, he's like, you know, hey, what would make these bitches think I hate women, right?
My response to that would be, listen, the best thing that's happened to Dave Chappelle, in my view, in the past couple of years is when Azealia Banks got on Twitter and said that he was good in bed and he never wanted to talk about that. Why don't we talk about that, Dave?
Right. Yes, totally. Dave is, oh boy, we can do a couple episodes on Dave. I you know what I mean? Like somebody, he is just pushing envelopes in a way that, you know, we just haven't witnessed in quite some time. And there's a tension, there's, you know, it's kind of like society has changed. You know, like you said, is that people are a bit, you know, they're hopefully more progressive around issues tied to, you know, race, class, gender, sexuality. And Dave, you know, he sounds a bit old school, like his idea, yeah, not a bit, a lot old school. And I also think the comedy scene has changed as well. Some of the things you might have been able to get away with that was offensive and just outwardly ridiculous, you know what I mean? Like just super offensive and racist, sexist, classist, homophobic. I don't quite think that, you know, that those types of jokes from 30 years ago, that they would quite resonate with people today.
Right. I mean, he's always going to go down as one of the greats, but we see Eddie Murphy apologizing for things that he said. We don't see Eddie Murphy getting up and being like, yeah, this is who I, you know what I mean? It's like Dave has a problem with the Me Too movement when people are getting assaulted every single day.
Yeah.
That's not funny. Or at least he didn't make it funny. And so at least let the fans that want to go, just let us go. Let us let you go and be done with him, in my view.
For the record, have you canceled Dave Chappelle?
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, totally. Okay. I didn't even put any real thought into it. But I just want to point out that the Netflix CEO is sticking to the bottom line. On October 8th, he responded to questions in an internal staff email and said, because, you know, people were speaking out besides Tara, it never feels good when people are hurt. This is such an HR response. It never feels good when people are hurting, especially our colleagues. You should be aware that some talent may join third parties and asking us to remove the show in the coming days, which we're not going to do. Sarantos also said that Chappelle's last special, Sticks and Stones, is Netflix's most watched, stickiest, and most award-winning stand-up special to date. So you see what they care about over there.
Yeah, the bottom line, making money, and Chappelle will continue to make them money. And so I guess we'll, you know, we'll see you, you know, the next Dave Chappelle special on Netflix. Yeah.
Thank you so much for tuning in to Black Tea. We'd like to give a shout out to our super producer, Kevin Sexton, Ryan Clark, who does our sound mixing, and our showrunner, Claire Broussard.